Thank you, Peter, for that presentation. I think I'll pick up on some of the ideas that you presented on. So I changed the title of my presentation a little bit. Synthetic Futures of Education, Speculative Responses for the Thulucine. Like every morning, a group of 2 and 3 year olds enter the room after spending time in the gym. However, today the room contains over 100 plastic bottles suspended from the ceiling, standing on shelves and gathered in groupings covering most of the classroom's floor. Plastic welcomes the children to the carefully curated space. The day before, children had helped fill bottles with plastic items. Beads, diapers, straws, cutlery, food containers, disposable cups, dental floss and their containers, hairbrush pieces, shopping bags, post-it flags, grass trimmer strings, gloves, saran wrap, bingo chips, dental picks, toothbrushes, zip ties, netting tubes, ice pack holders, credit card pieces, CD scraps, pens, markers, and the list goes on. Together we collected these items around the child care center and used the plastic bottles to contain them. Plastic, with its magical abilities, makes its presence known to the children, who quickly join in. Bottles fly through the classroom, roll across the floor and tables, invite anticipated sounds, and open new sensorial possibilities and regimes with their bright colors and translucent properties. The touch and sounds of plastics awaken children. As feminist environmental scholar Heather Davis writes, plastics' smooth surfaces beg to be touched, caressed, squeezed, and bent. This is exactly what the children do. Surprisingly, children find a delicacy in plastic. Bodies and bottles roll together, join forces to move in unison, rhythmically concealing each other. No matter how the children use the bottles, they never break. Resisting children's movements, they adapt to the pressure that children's fingers and bodies exert on them, and they even mold to record that pressure on their surface. In fact, plastics' indeterminacy, unruliness, and ubiquity are intensified in the room. Although it is not always easy to permanently live with this gigantic mound of plastics in a classroom, we quickly adapt to its malleability and durability. Again, as Davis beautifully puts it, and I quote, plastic exists outside of the proper logics of decay and transformation, and in its own category of creation, where microbes and bacteria are only now, as Peter showed us, beginning to evolve to use its incredible energy sources, unquote. As plastic connects with the light coming through the large windows, children's bodies' movements, the daily singing, and even the light projector educators bring into the room, we collectively ignore the fact that these very objects will outlive us all, adults and children alike. This perhaps is the 21st century classroom, resembling and responding to the ecologically toxic times that these children are inheriting from petrocapitalism. Of course, classrooms are already plastic. We are plastic, as Peter told us. We're just intensifying our plastic lives. Perhaps this queer world in synthetic classroom is the classroom of the future that might invite children to live in a plastic world that keeps it in sight and in mind, rather than trying to manage and hide it at people's peril. This paper falls plastics imaginaries into critically affirmative world in practices. drawing on our waste research project with young children that we do as part of the Common Worlds Research Collective and as part of the Climate Action Childhood. This is just one little introduction into a larger project. I use speculation to explore plastic worlding practices. With Kelly Malkopine, a year ago, we created what we refer to as a plastic collaboratory. A collaboratory, and I should say that Kelly is here, a collaboratory is a hybrid space of collaboration and laboratory where children, educators, and researchers are learning together to experiment with and articulate otherworldly relations and interactions with plastics. We ask what new subjectivities might emerge in early childhood education to creatively and critically, both creatively and critically, confront the complex toxicity that young children live with. Feminist philosophers instruct us on the importance of experimentation and speculation at a time when catastrophic events are commonplace across the globe. Drawing on Isabel Stengel's writings, the plastic collaboratory uses experimentation to, I quote, resist the present and appeal to a future in the mirror of which our present and our past are strangely deformed. Donna Haraway offers a speculation as a means to develop a specific mode of attention to the potentialities and virtualities of an unfolding situation, including their potential dangers and opportunities. There is no question that our toxic, plasticized world, created to feed our colonial and capitalist hyper-consumption and perpetual growth tendencies, needs new imaginaries. The debate over how to respond to plastic toxicities is constant. In our early childhood education circles, the most notable remediation initiative is based on reduce, reuse, recycle, also known as the R's. Yet, as waste scholar Meyer Hurd has written, these initiatives are ineffective. Recycling plastics only manages to move plastics out of sight and out of mind. These management practices do not remove our dependency on plastics, nor do they respond to the unknown and anticipated consequences of plastics' presence. In fact, Davis reminds us that plastics are not going away. The desire to create ourselves as in pristine environments has either dangerously backfired, like for example the overuse of pesticides or antibiotics, or has just dumped it somewhere else where toxicities are accumulated as unprecedented race by racialized, feminized, and impoverished bodies. Our synthetic classroom is a response to educational approaches that discipline children to collect, sort, and reclassify plastic materials for future recycling. In other words, we're looking to challenge strategies that maintain the capitalist and colonial futures that the R's have been designed to perpetuate. Instead, we explore the possibilities of speculative practices to engage with Haraway's Thulusine figuration, which she advances as an affirmative critique to the widely used term the Anthropocene. So we're trying to challenge and to rethink this idea of the Anthropocene with Haraway. Adding, never subtracting, to the disembodied and foreign subject positions of the Anthropocene, the Capitalocene and the Plantationocene, the Thulusine, she suggests, is the thick, the fibrous, and lumpy now. The Thulusine demands a collective ethico-political commitment to care for our, I quote, now that has been, is now, and is yet to come, unquote. As Haraway puts it in her Thulusine manifesto, its thonic powers are destructive and generative and in no one's back pocket. She says they are not finished and they are dreadful. Hope is their genre, but demanding responsibilities might be. Children try out Thulusine subject positions in the plasticized classroom. That is, positions that acknowledge the inseparability between our fleshy human bodies and the thinteric polymer bodies that were patented quite recently in 1909. And Peter showed us how we already are entangled with plastics. This oddly familiar commingling of human and plastic bodies in the classroom create the conditions for children to attune to practice curiosity towards, and ultimately embrace the Earth's inevitable queer plastic futurities. And I don't have time to think about this queer plastic futurity, but we can talk about it later. As pedagogues in early childhood education, we use our implication in the discipline that helps solidify our position of the detached anthropos, or as Haraway calls it, the upward-looking one, to make it odd and familiar, to make visible its destructive dependency on fossil fuels. In other words, we shift from the upward-looking detached anthropos that education helps to create to the Earth-focused Thulonic inseparabilities of children's already plastic lives. Taking seriously the task of staying with the travel of plastic toxic worlds, the queer world in synthetic classroom pays careful attention to the logics of plastics, aided by the scholarship of Heather Davis. She says that plastic is ubiquitous and infiltrates. Plastic makes demands on humans. Plastic tightly contains, refuses to disintegrate, is stubborn, produces a slow violence, is both malleable and resilient, creates a sealant, a barrier, is impermeable, maintains its identity and under virtually all conditions, is the substrata of advanced capitalism, reveals our dependency on petrochemicals, is both intensely resource depleting and ecologically devastating, is easy to take for granted and also difficult to fathom. In the synthetic classroom, we experiment with plastics logics, acknowledging that there is no way to extract one's life in the 21st century from it. We attempt to find creative strategies for learning to live with new toxicities without necessarily celebrating them. We experiment with polymer to accept it as a new queer future and to find ways of navigating horror while resisting the policies, governments, and corporations that would like to see our lives foreclosed. Our creative strategies, as Peter also talked about, are inspired by the work of artists who have for some time now been thinking with feminist, non-hegemonic logics and practices that disrupt the colonial affirmations of quick fix and homogeneous solutions, such as the arts, for example. Amongst these works is Painar Yolda's An Ecosystem of Excess, which inspired our synthetic classroom and eventually the children. She thinks with three questions. If life evolved from our current plastic debris-filled oceans, what would emerge? What would happen if life started in the ocean now? What if new creatures emerged that would live off of plastics? Building on these questions, educators Kelly and I playfully wonder, what would the synthetic futures of education entail? What new subjectivities might emerge from these synthetic educational spaces? Yolda's speculative responses do not perpetuate the scientific reasoning of Euro-Western colonization, but certainly sync with science to imagine other futures. Although I don't have enough time to do justice to her provocative exhibit, I will mention two of the pieces. First, a gigantic floating turtle with multicolored shell plates that has been feeding on balloons that end up in the Pacific Ocean. As Yolda explains, turtles' curiosity has shifted their shell structure forever. Second, another children's favorite, includes a colorful stomach inside a test tube that can digest 16 different types of plastics. Photos of the entire ecosystem of excess collection play on the wall through a projector that illuminates the bottles. Children notice, pick their favorite, imagine their own stories out of binary stories. I have another story, but given the time, I'm just going to move to the conclusion. So much has been taking place in our speculative work with plastic that I don't have time right now to cover it here. Because our work is speculative, we are not measuring outcomes. In other words, we're not monitoring children's change of behavior in the classroom or how children are reducing their use of plastic at home or whether they're more motivated to engage in recycling. Therefore, our responses to the toxicity of plastic is not necessarily generalizable nor replicable to other contexts. To do so would be to fall back into Cartesian myths of human reason, superiority, and control, which create and uphold both structures framing plastic problems and the illusion that us humans have the sole power to consciously fix them. However, and resolutely, we are creating new conditions for more livable worlds to emerge, or we try. Our hope is to recast these children's relations with polymers. Children are learning to notice and live with plastic in divergent ways from petrocapitalist relations that persist. In other worlds, through the pedagogical interventions taking place in the synthetic classroom, these children are practicing the curiosity that might, and only might, open them to grow up with rather than indifferent to the plastic that surrounds them. The co-composings that take place in the synthetic classroom invite children to attend to the common worlds that add to their current consumerist realities of 21st century capitalism. These children and the 100 bottles filled with plastic are coming together to explore new modes of subjectivities and invent otherwise collectives that challenge the codified, isolated practices that are now in place in early childhood education. Thank you.